Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhaktivedanta ki, Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam, Giriraj Maharaj, Jainitai Gopremanandi, Hari Om, Tat Sat. Okay, so what did we discuss in last night's class?
Mainly about the control of the body, mind, and temple.
Good. Any other points?
So then he becomes a woman.
Yeah.
And 1 month he was male and female. And he was. The people in the kingdom were not satisfied.
Good point. Anything else?
We also discussed the importance of Ramana's society. Ramana's society is three times the ones who carry the society because they are the topmost top in the ashrama system. First, to lose by reading and acquire knowledge. Not only knowledge, they also have the qualities. We discussed elaborate two qualities of
Good. Anything else?
A pure Brahmana who has got all the qualities, as discussed by Krishna, as mentioned by Krishna, his words will come true. What is the consensus point?
Good. Any other points?
Okay, so the end of the chapter is that Sudhumna, who became a male, again gets the body of the female and again gets the benediction by the mercy of the guru to be male and female and continue the root. He mentioned it's not important to be, Kopas mentioned that it's not important to be male or female. If the guru is active.
Okay. Anything else?
Austerity of body, mind, and speech.
Means?
Try to come earlier though. Not so late.
Austerity of the body, the mind, and the
speech.
Very good. So we heard last night that the qualification of the Brahmana, he must have control, or he must practice austerity of the mind, body, and speech. So we went through the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verses 14 to 16, and Krishna is describing the qualities of the Brahmana, or one in the mode of goodness, and how the Brahmana must have full control of the speech faculty, the mind, and also his body. Okay. In this way, he becomes qualified to perform yajna. And unfortunately, there was a mistake made in the yajna, in the sense that Sujumna's wife, she asked for a female child, they wanted the male. So then a male came, but then because of Vashishtha's, the Vashishtha has changed back into a male. Now he's gone into the forest of Shiva, and then Shiva is, by his potency, he's turned them into female. And now Vishishtha is saying it can be 1 month, 1 month, like that. So, very interesting story, very interesting pastime. So we're trying to understand the different points which are being made there. Prabhupada also made the point, do not be so concerned about your external body, whether you're male or female, no? But be concerned with the fact that we need to become Krishna conscious. That is the most important thing. Male or female, both are headaches. Doesn't matter which body you're in, it causes you problems.
Could you explain why Vasishtha prayed to Shiva? Because he knows that there is body of a male and female, it should be used for devotion service. So why did he pray to Shiva?
Because the king didn't want to be in that form, so. So then he asked him to change it back. Yeah, the king suddenly becomes a woman, that's a problem. You know, the king of the country suddenly becomes a woman, then there's a problem. So he asks to please change back. Any other points? Okay. So tonight we'll begin chapter 2.
Okay. You said something of the four times. That the purity is first, preaching is essence, and the books are
the basis. Yes.
And what there was one more thing.
Utility is the principle.
Okay. Utility.
Yeah, utility. Okay. So we begin in chapter 2. Shukadev Goswami said, thereafter, when his son Sujumna had thus gone to the forest to accept the order of Vanaprastha, Vaivaswata Manu Shraddhadev, being desirous to get more sons, performed severe austerities on the bank of the Jamuna for 100 years. So it is being described here that Vaivaswata Manu's dynasty is being described. We have heard in the previous canto, since canto 3, it is a description of the descendants of various Manus. And now we're hearing about a particular Manu whose name is Vaivaswata or Shraddhadev. So this is his descendants. And this is all leading to the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. Because this is the description of the solar dynasty. Then the second half of this canto, the ninth canto, will describe the descendants of the moon god, the moon dynasty. And then from the moon dynasty, that will lead into the tenth canto, and then we'll hear about the appearance of Lord Krishna, who appears in the moon dynasty. Then, because of this desire for sons, the Manu, known as Shraddhadev, worship the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, the Lord of the demigods. Thus he got 10 sons exactly like himself. Among them all, Ikshvaku was the eldest. So where have we heard of Ikshvaku?
Ramcharita.
Nice try, but...
In Bhagavad Gita,
which part of Bhagavad Gita? Where is it?
Fourth
chapter. Evam parampara praptam imam rajashiyu. So we're describing the parampara system where the saint, the knowledge is passed down through the saintly kings. So we hear that Krishna says, first I instructed this to Vivashwan. Vivashwan instructed it to Manu. Manu instructs it to Ikshvaku. So this is what is being spoken about here. So this is the disciplic succession. So these kings are called Rajashis. Rajashi means saintly king. Now what is the point of the kings, the saintly kings? It is to keep the dharma, or keep transcendental knowledge within human society, so that all people can benefit. So they are giving this Bhagavad Gita knowledge. It is the duty of the king to keep it intact, so that everyone in society gets the benefit of hearing the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedic scriptures. So you see here that the disciplic succession is being discussed, and this is why it is a problem that if the king suddenly is turned into a woman, that we don't have the opportunity for the knowledge to be protected and passed down through the different dynasties. So it was the duty of the kings. Because the brahmanas are the head of society. But it is the kings who protect the brahminical culture. And they make sure the brahminical culture is being maintained. Without the kshatriyas, then the brahmanas cannot be maintained. Society cannot be maintained. Therefore, the kshatriyas, it is their duty. So therefore, Ikshvaku, he was the son of Manu, who was the son of Vibhashwan. So in this way, we're hearing about how the knowledge has remained intact throughout the universe. The defect of the modern government, Prabhupada would always criticize, they do not maintain the Bhagavad Gita knowledge. The Vedic principles are not maintained. The government actually should sponsor ISKCON. Just like last year, we got the $500,000 donation from the government, right? But actually, they should just be maintaining the temple. Devotees should not have to worry about maintaining the temple. Actually, the government, that is their responsibility to maintain the Brahminical culture. But they don't maintain the Brahminical culture, that is their defect. The Brahminical culture is not there. So therefore, the duty of the king is to make sure that the Brahminical culture continues. But the government these days, they have become materialistic, and they do not invest in Brahminical culture. They like to invest in adharma as opposed to dharma, or maintaining the law and maintaining religious teaching and scriptures. So this is the defect in this day and age. But the saintly kings, that was their duty. Therefore they are called Rajarshi. Yeah, Raja Rishi. Saintly kings. And actually it mentions in the Mahabharata that Arjuna that one year where he went to the forest for an entire year. You remember the pastime took place? That the five Pandavas, they all married Draupadi. They had one wife. They had different wives, but Draupadi, she had married all five of them. So, when they came before Narada, Narada came to visit the Pandavas, and they introduced Narada to Draupadi. And when Draupadi left, the Narada said, you have to be very careful, because she could cause problems between the five of you. No? Because she is a very qualified wife. You may all argue, and you may fight amongst each other. So when Narada left, then the Pandavas, they discussed, and they made a deal that only one of them could be with Draupadi at any one time. And if one of them was with Draupadi and the other one could not enter if they were with Draupadi privately at that time. So Yudhishthira, he was with Draupadi in the armory, where they keep the weapons. So he was with Draupadi, and then one Brahmana came, and he said to Arjun, he said that some dacoits have taken my cows, and they have left with the cows. So Arjuna said, I will go and chastise the dacoits. I'll just go and get my bow. So he came to the door of the armory, and then he knew that Yudhishthira was alone with Draupadi. So he knew that if he entered, they made a deal that if any one of them, entered the association of the other with Draupadi, they would have to go to the forest for a year. They would be banished. So Arjuna, he thought, what should I do? Should I enter, or should I go and protect the cows? Or should I not enter and protect myself? So as a Kshatriya, then he knocked on the door, he entered in, he put his head down, he said, Yudhishthira, forgive me, I have broken our promise. And then he took his bow, Gandiva, he went, and then he killed the dacoits, took the cows and gave them back to the Brahmin. When he came back to the palace, then he said to Yudhishthira, he said, now I have to go to the forest for 1 year. Yudhishthira said, you don't have to go because this is a very extraordinary circumstance. He said, no, I broke the principle, therefore I go. So he went for 1 year to the forest. And he took the Brahmanas with him, and for that 1 year he studied the Shastra. So actually it said that Arjuna was as learned as the sages who would instruct him. He was an incredibly learned person. Now, Arjuna was especially very, very learned. Very knowledgeable in the Vedic literature and the Bhagavad Gita. So, these Kshatriyas are called Rajarshis, which means they are saintly kings. They understand the Shastra. They take guidance from the Brahmanas, and then they keep the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literatures within human society. They maintain Dharma. So this is how the succession continues. Any points so far? Okay. Among these sons, Prishadra, following the order of his spiritual master, was engaged as a protector of the cows. He would stand all night with a sword to give the cows protection. Hey, John, you like to read them?
One who becomes a virasana takes the vow to stand all night with his sword to give protection to the cows. Because Prasadra was engaged in this way, it is to be understood that he had no dynasty. We can further understand from this vow accepted by Prasadra how essential it is to protect the cows. Some son of a Kshatriya would take this vow to protect the cows from the ferocious animals, even at night. What then is to be said of sending cows to slaughterhouses? Mm-hmm. This is the most sinful activity in human society.
Mm-hmm. Any points here?
Today I went out and then I walk. I park my car somewhere, and in the front of the in the window, always when I enter into the Indonesian the Chinese shop, there's one big Chinese shop, and when you enter, I don't like to go inside that shop because I know that there's something happening there. So always even if the vegetables are cheap there, I don't want to go and buy there. Today what happened, I just went and parked my car, and on the opposite side, in the window, it's written the cows there, and they've given labels on the parts of the body of the cow. And one on the top, the pig, and on the left side, the goat, and on the hen. Everything, they mark the parts of the body, what is available separately. Wing, the bone, and so that the cow, big poster, the cow.
Any other points?
I have a question. Which one is worse in sending the cow to slaughterhouse or killing the baby in the womb of the two? Both heinous crimes.
The same.
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 Sorry, can I...
Which is worse, killing the baby, abortion? Or killing the cow, both are the same. Any other point?
Don't you have one doubt? Hmm. That I heard that if the child has a serious mental problem,
hmm.
then the mother and the father, they decide not to, to not have that child. So which category will that one belong to?
If they have a problem, then they don't have the child.
No, the child has a mental problem.
Yeah, no.
So it's not fully properly known.
Yeah.
It's going to have be very defective.
Then?
So they find it out and then they don't want to have the child. Is that a thing?
They don't want to have the child, that's not their prerogative. If the child has to be born and the child has some defect, then the parents have to bring up the child. That's the, that, that's karma.
It's like the child is totally mentally retarded. So you cannot do anything.
Yeah, but you can't kill the child. It's not permitted.
There was an article in the Bhakti Godhead magazine that there was a devotee and she had twins. And the doctor said that she, they have got, the children, the babies have got some defect, but they kept on going. And the two children were born and they were all normal.
So you're right.
Krishna fixed everything.
Krishna fixed.
Any other point?
Actually, the society can flourish when the cows and the women, children, they are all protected. So as the Lord Krishna says, now here you can see Prasadra being a king, he is taking very keen step to protect the cows. So it's one of the symptoms that the society is, or his kingdom can flourish by protecting the cows.
Looks to me he was very, very elevated from his previous life and might have done something wrong. And so he was born like a king's son. And then he was so quiet that he was detached from the very beginning and he just wanted to protect the cows.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other point? So it describes in the Vedic literatures that there are five innocents which must always be protected under every circumstance. Who are they?
Children.
Children. Old people.
Brahmanas.
Cows. And women.
Mm-hmm.
These five must be protected under all circumstances.
And you'll see in modern society, why are we having problems in modern society? Because these five are not being protected.
Yeah.
No? All people are not being protected properly. All people are very wise and you must listen to whatever they say. No? Just like we have Guru Ma and Guru Pa. So we listen to what they say. We have to give respect to the elderly people because they have wisdom. They can guide us, and therefore they should be respected and treated properly. Prabhupada explains that in Papua New Guinea, when the people got old in the village, they put them on the roof and roll them off.
Yes.
Right? And then they have Sunday feasts.
Yes.
Right? Roll off the people, right? The old people, and then cook them and then eat them. Okay. And it's Papua New Guinea out there in the tribes. They're still doing it, I don't know. But. So, this is the opposite of respecting and looking after. The elderly people must be maintained. And that is part of the Vedic culture. Now, why has society broken down? Because family units have broken down. So this is Arjuna's argument in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna said to Krishna, if we destroy the family, then the family unit breaks down, and then who will protect the women? The women are not protected, we'll have Vana Sankara. Right? And then we'll have all sorts of problems in society. So if you look at society these days, modern society, what we call society, why is it not working? Because the family unit is breaking down. Because in the traditional societies, if you look around all the ancient cultures of the world, India, China, anywhere, any place, the whole family lived together in a village. You had no privacy, right? Everyone used to live together. These days, everyone wants to live by themselves. I will live in my house and that one will live in their house and like that. But back in the old days, the whole family would live together. Uncles and aunties and everyone was like a village. And they would bring up the children. Right? And then everyone was protected within that unit. Right? And there were strong, strong mental culture and everyone was psychologically stable. These days, we have a lot of mental problems because people are trying to do everything by themselves. Of course you'll go crazy. Of course you'll be stressed. You try to bring up a child by yourself, right? You live by yourself, you don't see anyone practically all day, and you have to bring up the child all day. It's not natural. You're meant to be with your mother, your sisters, your aunties, like that, to assist you. And all the men are meant to work together. These days, the families, they may not even see each other very often. So it doesn't create a good culture. So traditionally, that was the system. And the elderly people, they were looked after. These days, we find it difficult to look after the elderly people, so we have to put them in the home. Someone else will look after them. But in the ancient time, they would all stay in the village because there were so many people in the village, everyone could look after together. Big family, brothers and uncles and this and like that. So it worked. Now, these days, it's all broken down. Even for devotees, it becomes very difficult. So this is the way a society is broken down. So the elderly people must always be protected, right? And then the brahmanas must always be protected because they are giving knowledge and guidance to society. These days it's hard to find brahmanas. Most of the people who call themselves brahmanas these days, they're not even brahmanas. You go to the temples in India, just like if you go to India these days, is anyone here from India? Right? So you go to India these days, and then what happens? You go to the temple, and he says, I am the pandit. I am the purohit. I am the priest, the... I am the brahmana, like that, so give me some money. And it just becomes a culture of, it becomes a business, practically speaking. You go to most temples, even today I was having lunch and the devotees were telling me, they went to Jagannath Puri, and right in front of Jagannath, literally right in front of Jagannath, the front of his altar, there was the devotee's father had money in his pocket, so the pujari just pulled the money like this, took all the money out. And then the devotee grabbed the money back off the priest. And it was right in front of Jagannath, right, in the temple. And then the priest is saying, this is for Bhagawan. Why you not give everything for Bhagawan like that? So if you're such a priest, why are you stealing like this and pulling it out of the pocket? So that's not the culture. No. And then the devotee was telling me that it is said in Jagannath Puri, they tell everyone that because the temple in Puri is non-different from Dwarka. No? So then they say that all of the pandas in Jagannath's temple, Mandir, they're non-different from the Yadu dynasty. And the other dice are very strong, so then they will be very strong and they will take everything to give it to Krishna. That's not the fact. The fact is, they're materialistic in consciousness. Now, when you come to an ISKCON temple, you walk in and the bhakti monk goes up and grabs all the money out of your pocket and then he says, I'm giving all this to Krishna. No, it doesn't happen like that. Prabhupada never taught us to have this culture. So actually, a brahmana is not interested in money. That's the point. We'll see this as we go through this chapter tonight. A brahmana is not interested in money. Otherwise, if a brahmana becomes controlled by money, he cannot speak the truth. Therefore, Chanakya says a brahmana will never accept a wage. Because as soon as you start paying someone, you control them. Just like if you're working for a company, the boss comes to you and says, hey, if you don't behave yourself, I'm going to take away your money. And you'll lose your job. And immediately you'll do whatever you're told. Then you can't speak the truth. So if a brahmana is controlled by money, then he cannot speak the truth. And the brahmana's duty is satyam. Param satyam, dimihi. He's meant to speak the absolute truth. Whether it is palatable or unpalatable. So therefore, the brahmana, he cannot be paid a wage. He must be. So therefore, a brahmana must always be protected in society. He must be maintained. And they live on charity. They take charity, they distribute charity. That is brahminical culture. So a brahmana has to be maintained by everyone else in society. So the old people, the brahmanas, and the women. We see that the brahmanas, the old people and the women are not being looked after in society these days. So much abuse of women. Right? You saw what happened in India a few years ago. That the girl was raped and killed on the bus. Like that. Big court case. And then they had to have a big court case. What was the court case for? Just get the four guys, just cut off their heads, and that's it. End of story. No court case.
Nothing. It's nothing. Nowadays, they are raping grade 2 kids in the school.
Yeah, I mean, so many, every day you hear on the
news.
Yeah. Every day you hear on the news, you hear some crazy thing. This Kali Yuga. So the point is, the women in this country, the women are not being treated properly. In India, they're being treated very badly. All over the world. Right? So how can society be peaceful and happy and prosperous if the women, the old people, the brahmanas are not being protected properly? So therefore, these personalities must always be protected under all circumstances. Right? Women, brahmana, old people, and children. And we see, practically every time you turn on the news these days, it's child abuse. Catholic Church, so many problems, this one, so many problems. It's like, it's all over the place now. And then, the women, the children, the brahmana, the old person, and, as it's saying here, the cows. So Prabhupada, he would always attack this point relentlessly. You see, whenever he met another religious leader, right, there's famous videos, you might have seen of Prabhupada, where he's speaking to the cardinal in France. Right? Famous, you know, you see the video of Prabhupada, he's speaking to the cardinal. And he's constantly saying to this cardinal, why do you kill the animal? And the cardinal says to Prabhupada, the animal does not have soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Prabhupada said, no, the animal has soul. Why do you kill the animal? Your Bible says, thou shalt not kill. And the cardinal keeps saying, this is not important. Mm-hmm. We were trying to change it. And Prabhupada would not, he wouldn't talk about anything else until they got past this point. He said, no, why do you kill the animal? Why do you kill the cow? How can society be peaceful? So, Prabhupada would always attack on this point. And he said that the reason there is so much war and there is so much disturbance in modern society because they're killing the animal, particularly the cow. Right? The baby in the womb, so much slaughter and death. I saw the figure the other day, something like 35 billion animals they're killing a year on the earth. Something like 35 billion animals that get killed every year. And that, I think they said, that doesn't include the fish. Because you can't count how many fish are killed. That's just land animals. 7 billion human beings, 35 billion animals are being killed every year on the earth. So how can our society be peaceful? And Australia is one of the number one killers on the earth. And I think India is number two. Or India's one and we're two. It's like something like that. In the slaughter of animals. So, Australia is a very opulent place to live at this point in history, but it will crumble, guaranteed. Because it's a very simple country. It's very simple. It's just a matter of time. Don't have faith that it's all going to stay like this. You think it's nice because you've got your Honda Civic and you drive, you know, back and forth from the temple, and you think it's all nice, but it's not going to stay like this. Right? Maybe it won't happen in our lifetime, maybe it will, but everything will change. Because there's so much simple activity. So Prabhupada says that these five must always be maintained. Now, particularly the cow is one of the seven mothers. Now, what are the seven mothers that are mentioned in the Vedas?
Guru's wife.
Guru's wife. Brahmana's wife. King's wife. One's own mother. The nurse. The cow. And the earth. These are the seven mothers. Right? But even as devotees, are we protecting all the mothers? I see devotees are not protecting the earth. And devotees know better than the non-devotees, I see. Yeah? That the earth is our mother, right? But the devotees constantly, they're just ruining everything. I heard the figure the other day, I don't know if it's entirely true or not, it could be, that the landfill in England, and by 2018 they won't have anywhere more place to put all the rubbish in the, because they put it all in the tips. You know, whenever, you know, you go to the tips, we have tips all around Melbourne and then all around Australia. So everything you throw in your rubbish bin, right, the council come and picks it up, they put it in the trucks, and the trucks take it to a tip and they dump it, and they cover it with land. They're saying in England, by 2018, there's no more place to put the rubbish. And they're saying, well, what do we do? In Australia, we have more land. But the point is, devotees, they throw out everything. They're no better than the non-devotees. So we're not protecting the earth. Wasting so many things and using so and taking so many things for granted. Just like on the weekend, or in Melbourne at the moment, we have the Sustainability Festival. Very interesting. They set up a little, I went there on Saturday, they set up a little house in front of the West End, like the square, just opposite, kind of across from Gopal's, next to the town hall, a little eco house there. To teach people about how to be environmentally friendly, how to make compost and all these things, how to save energy, reduce energy, like that. So devotees need to learn these things. We should be the leaders in these principles. So the cow is one of the seven mothers. And a cow-based society, an agrarian society, where we go back to agriculture, and we live on farms, and we live off the land, and we grow our food, that is the way to sustain the earth, that is the way to protect the cow. And Prabhupada said this, if you do not work the bull, right, you will not understand what to do with it, and then you will eat the bull. And that's what happens these days. Yeah? Everywhere in Australia, all the animals are killed. Why? Because people don't know what to do. Right? We live in the city very comfortably, but actually we should be living on the farm and, you know, using the bulls to make our food. So this is the way a society should be. So the cow must be protected. The cow is the basis of society. And as we know, Prabhupada says, the cow's milk, right? She is our mother because she gives us the milk. And the milk nourishes our brain, and our brain becomes fertile, and then we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, any points?
The Brahmana is to be very strong in those days. I heard Chanakya and he didn't want the king to obey him, and so he left the kingdom and he went to live in a forest sort of, and then he found a boy that who was he had a Kshatriya spirit, and so he trained him, and then he conquered that king, and then I think a Maurya dynasty or something that boy from
Chandragupta.
So he used to be so strong, he never used to, I mean, the king had to listen to him, and they expected the kings to obey him.
Any other points?
He said that cow's flesh
flesh itself is how many times you have to actually take birth again. Just by eating that much flesh, let's say this much flesh, normally cows have a lot of hair within that sort of area. That's how many times you have to take birth again.
I will never eat meat again. I bow in front of you, I bow. Any other points?
Okay. Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cow shed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. When the very strong tiger seized the cow screamed in distress and fear. And Prishadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. In the morning when Prishadra, who was quite able to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. Although Prishadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest Vasishta cursed him, saying, "In your next life, you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a Shudra because of killing the cow." So, Janesh Rabu, you have to.
It appears that the sister was not free from the Mogana, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prasudra, the sister should have taken Prasudra's offense very lightly, but instead, her sister cursed him to become a Shudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse the disciple, but give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Her sister, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura says that he was durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good.
Good. So, what are the points here?
Spiritual master, or the priest must guide the disciple properly. We should not take decision based on just the action. We need to consider circumstances. Yes, Gopal says that we should not consider circumstances.
Good. Anything else?
Especially because it was not intentional. He didn't intentionally kill the dark.
Any other points?
Could that be a lila? The Lord gave him intention to do it?
Yeah, Krishna could have been involved, possibly. Any other point?
But actually, he regretted it later.
Yep.
And I think he went for 12 years to do the question.
Yeah.
Question. So, Vasishta, being a very learned and a great sage, how can he be considered as, or he is in a tamoga? Because you cannot be perform austerities of penance for longer duration if you are not even in a mode of goodness. So how can we reconsider this point?
What's the point?
The point is, I'm not able to reconcile Vasishta being in this Amogun platform and cursing.
Now, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in the commentary that the guru should not be a guru for money or for profit. We saw in the previous canto, in the pastime of Bali Maharaj, the Shukracharya, who was also a very highly elevated brahmana, he became attached to the wealth that was being provided to him by Bali Maharaj. So it appears that Vasishta is also like this, that he is also being controlled by the wealth which is being given by the disciples, like that. So therefore there is some discrepancy in his consciousness. So once again the point is being made that Brahmana, the guru, he should not be controlled by wealth. Now, it is being pointed out here, we have to choose our guru very carefully. And actually, Haridas Thakur says in the Harinam Chintamani that before you accept a guru and before the guru accepts a disciple, they should associate and study each other for 1 year. And Haridas Thakur points out, just like if you buy something valuable, just like these days, they would buy a car. You don't just walk into the car yard and just buy any car. I remember many years ago, we took my grandmother, you know, she's like an older lady, she wanted a new car. So we took her into the car yard, and she says, I like that one, I like that one, it's a nice colour. And we said, we don't look at the colour, you have to lift up the hood, see what's underneath, see what the engine is like, see what the inside is like. You don't just pick something based on the externals. Just like in English, we have this saying, do not judge the jam by the jam jar. You don't say what's inside, what it is like, just by what it looks like outside, because it looks nice. So Haridas Thakur says you should not choose the guru based on material circumstances. Because the guru is from this particular country. Or because the guru is making good jokes. Or because the guru pays attention to my children. Or because the guru, and so many material reasons why sometimes people become attracted to a particular guru. We should not choose the guru based upon material qualifications. The guru should be accepted based on his understanding of the absolute truth. And his ability to explain the absolute truth to ourselves and to others. Srila Prabhupada explains in the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there are different types of gurus. So Prabhupada explains that we can have many Shiksha gurus. Shiksha guru can be many. Therefore, when we say the pranam prayers, Vandeham, Sri Guru, Sri Yuta Parakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Gurun means?
Many gurus.
Our Shiksha gurus. So you can have many Shiksha gurus. And Prabhupada explains in the Adi Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are many Shiksha gurus, but one of them will become very prominent. And that will become our Diksha guru, the person we take initiation from. So your Diksha guru is your primary Shiksha guru. He's the person you take the most instruction of. That's your Diksha guru, your Shiksha guru. But you have many Shiksha gurus. So we have to choose the guru very carefully, based upon his ability to inspire us in Krishna consciousness. So Haridas Thakur says that you have to see, how does the guru speak? How does he inspire myself? How does he inspire others? What is his prachar? What is his achar? This is explained by Sanatana Goswami. When Sanatana Goswami is speaking about Haridas Thakur, he says, you are an ideal acharya. Acharya means one who sets the example to others. Why is he the ideal acharya? Because he speaks perfectly and he acts perfectly. Both have to be there. We have to act perfectly, we have to speak perfectly. Then we become acharya. Otherwise we're not acharya. We don't have qualification. We don't have adhikar to be acharya. So therefore it has to be both. So, Haridas Thakur says, you have to study the guru for 1 year. See what his achar is, means what is his behavior. How does he act towards others? How does he treat other devotees? How does he act towards his own guru, towards his god brothers, and towards disciples, and those he's giving shelter to? And we have to see what is his pracha. How does he preach? Does he inspire us in Krishna consciousness? So this is the qualification. So you have to choose guru very carefully. You can't just choose any guru, because your life can become ruined. And the problem these days, you see, especially in India, is anyone here from India? If you see in India, people, they just choose any guru. There's so many bogus gurus. And Prabhupada actually said this. Prabhupada said at one point in time, it is quite depressing that there are so many bogus gurus who are making it so difficult to spread Krishna consciousness. Because they just preach anything. They just preach all sorts of nonsense without understanding what is the param satyam dhimahi, what is the absolute truth. They do not have adhikara qualification. To become guru, you must understand what is the absolute truth. Otherwise, you have no qualification to be guru. So it appears here that Vasishtha, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions that it appears that he's become attached to material facility. Therefore, he has become contaminated, and therefore he's not qualified to give instruction. Whereas, Srila Prabhupada, he would give practically unlimited compassion to devotees. Just like there was one devotee, this was in Prabhupada's time, one devotee that was brought to Prabhupada's attention, because when Prabhupada was on the planet, they had a life membership program in India. So devotees would go around and they would collect funds on behalf of ISKCON by making life members. So this one person, he was going and making life members, but he was keeping the money. He was not handing it in to ISKCON. So it came to Prabhupada's attention. And it kept happening, kept happening. So Prabhupada said, tell him to come and speak to me. So he came to speak to Prabhupada, right? And then Prabhupada told him not to do this, and then he went out and he kept doing it again. So Prabhupada said, bring him again. So Prabhupada was giving him more chances, more chances. So then, Tamal Krishnamaraj, he said to Prabhupada, he said, when do we say enough is enough with this person? And Prabhupada said, the mercy of Lord Nityananda is unlimited. There is no end to the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So we always try to rectify someone. Prabhupada said, it is better to rectify them than to just kick them out. Easy just to kick them out, but no, rectify them. That is Lord Nityananda's mercy, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, Prabhupada's mercy. So Prabhupada kept calling him out, but then he kept doing it, so then eventually Prabhupada said, okay, kick him. Prabhupada said, okay, enough, go. He said, get rid of him. So, Prabhupada was not sentimental, but he always tried to rectify people. So here, Vasishtha, as Prabhupada points out, it was a mistake. Or you see the disciple just did something wrong, but the disciple is repentant. The guru will, as Prabhupada said, he gives penance or atonement to the disciple. So if the guru sees you've done something wrong, then he will say, okay, you go and do this service and you purify your consciousness. Atone for yourself. Because I remember when I first became a devotee, I joined the temple, and then there were two devotees in the temple and they had a fight. They go into a fight and they fought like that. So the temple president, Balaram Prabhu, is just before Aniruddha Prabhu, then he called them up to the office and he said, okay, for 1 week you'll both clean the toilets. Every day, both of you. So every day they were down there cleaning the toilets, like that. He said, both of you go now, clean the toilets. Atone for what you have done. Right? And purify your consciousness. So this is the way the guru will teach, and this is the way he will make the disciples purify. He doesn't just remove the disciple, but he tries to purify them. So Vasishtha, he has done, Prabhupada says, is not so good. The way he is. He just cursed him. Your next life, you will become a sudra. Right? Instead of trying to purify him in another way. So Prabhupada does not approve at this point. Okay. Any points?
Really, how to understand that he did it for the material benefit?
Vasishtha. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions like that. So.
He said Durmati, but he didn't say that he was interested in money or something.
You have to read the commentary.
Mm-hmm. I just want to know, you mentioned about Achar and Prachar. Nowadays, you can see spiritual masters, they travel all over the world. And they have so many disciples. Now, prachar, like we can hear from their lectures, from their books. But how do we know that, like achar? Because myself, I'm not that in a stage to understand an elevated person like spiritual master.
Yeah, but you can observe someone, you can observe. You observe the person. When they're apart, you look at them, you study them, you watch, you try to get association with them, and then you observe them. Krishna has given you buddhi, intelligence, so you can see something. It's not that you're blind or unintelligent. Krishna has given you, you have to study. What you read about in the books is that person like that. Does he do those things? Does he show humility? Does he show service attitude? Does he do this? Does he teach you how to respect prasadam properly? How to be clean properly? All these things. Like my spiritual master, he taught me many things. You know, one time he said, bring a tulsi plant to my room, because he was chanting upstairs, just up there. So I took the tulsi plant, and he said, get a plate to put under the tulsi plant. So I went downstairs, I grabbed the plate, and I brought it up. And then when I brought it up, he said, where's that plate from? I said, from the dining room. He said, what have people been doing on the plate? I said, eating on the plate. So he said, you want to put a muchi plate underneath tulsi? Because I was a new devotee, I didn't understand what is cleanliness. He said, get out of here. He said, go and find a clean plate, which has not been used. Otherwise, you're committing offense to tulsi. Understand? So you have to, by association, then you see, they teach you things. Then you see the achar, the prachar is correct. Does it make sense?
You mean like, you know, spiritual mind is here, try to get more,
mine
should be more eager to get
dissociation. Why not? What do you want to do? Not associate with your spiritual master? Is that Krishna consciousness? Don't associate with your spiritual master. You should try to associate with your guru as much as you can. Is it clear? Not just your guru, any shiksha guru, any senior devotee, you should associate as much as you can. Then you will learn something. Is it clear? Okay. Any other points?
See, Prabhupada, when Lord Ram Chandra went to forest, everybody was trying to blame Kekai. And that she is Durmati and she has sent to for 14 years to the forest. But Lord Rama, he never blamed her for anything. See.
So what's the point?
Well, I thought it's just a leader. Because he wanted to make an example,
yes,
that you should not commit any sin.
Yes, so Lord Ram is teaching us something.
Yes?
Lord Ram is teaching us something.
Yeah.
Any other point? Okay. Then, when the hero, Prishadra, was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. So two things we learn from this verse. What are the two things we learn from this verse?
You must accept the curse of the spiritual master or brahmana.
No.
Just for good.
Yeah, something like that. But then what is the point?
Instruction of the spiritual master.
We must obey the spiritual master.
Yeah, we must be dedicated to our guru.
Dedicated.
Yeah. And then what is the next point?
So he went for atonement.
No, what else is being emphasized here in this verse?
Controlling the senses.
Celibacy. Yeah, these two things are very important. If you want to make advancement in spiritual life, you have to be celibate. We discussed this last time. This is austerity of the
body.
Body. Yeah, Krishna says in the Gita. Okay, you have to do it. If you want to make serious spiritual advancement, Prabhupada says sense gratification and spiritual life, they go ill together. You can't do both. I mean, you can. Some people like Jayavataka Swami, he has set up the congregational ministry in ISKCON. So if you look at the standards, there's like one round, three regulative principles, four rounds, three like that, and then because people struggle with illicit sex, right? In marriage, it's a fact. You know, people struggle, even devotees who are married, even initiated devotees can struggle with it. So Maharaj has said, like, you know, up to a certain point, then, you know, three principles, right? And then chanting this many rounds. But then if you want to take initiation or take shelter of the guru, it has to be four regulative principles and
16 rounds.
Right? So that's a high level of commitment. In Kali Yuga, that's a high level of commitment. But if you want to make serious advancement, you have to practice celibacy. You can make advancement by following three principles. You know, in your marriage with your wife, you know, if you're having illicit sex, you can still make advancement, chant 8 rounds, or you can still, but you won't make rapid advancement. You won't make serious advancement. If you want to make serious advancement, you have to become celibate. You have to practice that. That's a high level of commitment, but that's what's required. So it says here in the Bhagavatam that if you want to make advancement, serious advancement in spiritual life, you have to practice celibacy. Now, it is difficult to practice celibacy in this day and age. And this question was, I was reading the other day, Karuna Nidhi Prabhu sends out his emails nearly every day to enlighten all of us. And Radhanath Swami was being asked this question. What if we are struggling with sense gratification, desires for sex and like that? So Maharaj, he quoted Prahlad Maharaj, who was in the 7th canto. So Prahlad Maharaj says, if you scratch an itch, the itch becomes more itchy. So Maharaj is saying that if you, or Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Maharaj is quoting, that if you have sex desire, but you act on the sex desire, the desire would become stronger. Therefore, it is said that we must control it. The way to get the itch gone is you leave the itch alone. Right? And it will take time, it will take determination, it will take patience, determination, enthusiasm, but you can do it. And then ultimately, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Param jishwa nivartate. You have to get a higher taste. You have to get a superior taste from Krishna consciousness. If you get superior taste from Krishna consciousness, you can give up all of the desires in this world, including sex life. That is the only way to overcome. Now, the other thing which is being emphasized in this particular verse is that one must be obedient to one's guru. This is a key point in spiritual life. If you want to make spiritual advancement, you have to become dedicated to your spiritual master. And actually it says that this particular personality, when he was cursed by Vasishtha, but because he did not lose faith in Vasishtha, because he was his guru, and he continued to follow, it is said that he became liberated. And Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 34, practically the most important verse of the Gita, practically the most famous verse of the Gita, what is 4:34? Tadviri, Pranipatena, Pariprasthena, Sevaya. So practically the most famous verse of the Gita, all of us know this verse, right? So, Prabhupada says in the purport, the secret of success in spiritual life is satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master. That is the secret of success. How do we become successful in spiritual life? Hey, Ananda Priya, what is going on? Sit down. This is not kindergarten. This is not play school. This is not Kumon. This is Bhakti Vedanta course. Sit down. Stop walking in and out everywhere like monkey. Sit down. Monkey girl, sit. We will train the monkeys. So, Prabhupada said the secret of success in spiritual life is satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master. So that is how we become perfect, right? We follow our guru perfectly. The instructions of our spiritual master we follow, and by following the instructions of the spiritual master, we become Krishna conscious, right? It is the secret of success. And even this disciple of Dukh Vasishtha, when Vasishtha was cursing him, but still he accepted the chastisement, and Prabhupada said, an advanced devotee will accept the chastisement of the spiritual master. And he will think it is more beneficial than the praise of the spiritual master. So he accepts it. He accepts the chastisement, right? He stays dedicated to following his guru's order, and he becomes perfect. And Prabhupada said that is the secret of success, right, in spiritual life, is to follow the order of the spiritual master. So that's what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. Any points? Okay. Thereafter, Prishadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in mind, and established control over his senses, being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone. He gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus, Prishadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. So what is this verse teaching us, these three verses?
Teaching us that if you love Krishna, then all the sins will be finished.
Yeah, and also just teaching us that one may give up attachment to material things, but one must never give up attachment to Krishna. He became completely absorbed in bhakti. And that is the test of a devotee. A devotee becomes completely absorbed in devotional service, and he gives up all attachment to the outside world. Even as if he was deaf, blind, and dumb. He had no attachment to this material world. So a devotee becomes completely disinterested to anything in this material world and becomes completely focused on Krishna. And that is the test for every devotee. Now, all of us have to become detached from this material world and completely absorb ourselves in devotional service to Krishna. So that's what happened. When his life became difficult, he just renounced everything, accepted the curse, became fully absorbed in Krishna, and he attained perfection. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us here. Any other points?
It looks like Rishabdev.
Looks like what?
Rishabdev.
Rishabdev. Yeah. From the fifth canto. Yeah, same. And Jad Bharata also.
Yeah.
Same consciousness. And Guru Ma. Same consciousness.
Yeah, what I say is all our Guru Ma, I say it.
Any other points?
I have a question.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first was the next word. He will take a shoe. So my question is, he could have progressed, like he could have again took, he could have served his Maharaj again and again. Why he renounced everything and he left everything, and he could have, he is doing the best, he is serving his Guru Maharaj anyways. Why he renounced everything and he left everything?
Yeah, that's also service to the Guru. To become renounced at the end of life is service to the Guru also. So he's showing us the example. In the Bhagavad Gita, just like you'll see all through the Bhagavad Gita, that at the end of their life, the great kings, they renounce everything and they become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So we should also do like that. It's the example. That's part of their culture. You know, when material things become too difficult, they renounce it and they just become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Take Vanaprast. So that's what he's done. So he's also following the Varnashram system. He's also following his guru's instructions. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
What is it you don't understand?
No.
What's your question?
If a guru dies, a disciple.
Yeah, but this person is very advanced in Krishna consciousness. Right? So, I mean, for a start, the chastisement is not correct anyway. Right? But sometimes when something happens in our life, we see it as a circumstance or as a opportunity to surrender more to Krishna. So that's what he's doing. Surrendering more to Krishna.
Is it also the fact that when Vasishtha actually cursed him, he actually renounced him rather than Prasada renouncing the Guru? But in fact, the Guru was the one who actually sort of, you know, got him...
Cursed him, yeah.
Dead.
Yeah, it's true.
So that therefore he decided, Prasada decided to actually, okay, the Guru is actually renouncing me, I mean, he's cursing me and sort of getting me out of here. I might as well actually devote myself, even though I'm devoted to the Guru, but I'll still go and do devotion service with him in mind. That's what he has done. That's not the other way around.
Does that answer your point?
This also shows that the qualification of receptors in Srupa Goswami says Nitsa Nishaya Deva. So here, Prasada, we can understand from this past time that he did get a curse, but he never took that as a motivation for his devotion service. So he continued and perfected his life by perfectly following the teachings of his Guru. So obviously, Guru is guided him, but for one circumstance, he was cursed. But he took that as an advantage and then perfected his life. So this verse especially says that he is perfect with his pure devotional service. But that's the goal of any other disciple.
Anything else?
Okay, in those days, Brahmana used to be so strong that their curse never used to be in vain. So maybe he might have thought that to avoid the life of a Shudra in next life, the only thing he can do is to absorb himself in Krishna. And then and he was so advanced that he didn't want to retaliate or anything, and like King Parikshit, he was cursed too. So, but he renounced, he was a king, and king, he renounced everything, and he heard the Bhagavatam for 1 week. So, what I am saying that somehow great he was, and he knew that Lord Krishna is the best to solve all these problems.
Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.